This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
the
be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-doo.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking hoe train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard. Is it JT, not your feel good mind?
Place to Be Nation, happy new year, and welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Tuesday evening, and Scott Criscola, happy 2017, our, 7th year? 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 7th year on air, calendar year.
I know, isn't that crazy? Yeah. Good evening, JR, good evening, Place to Be Nation. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm going to guess.
Could have got our master's degree by now.
I know, really. Welcome to episode 432 of the mothership,
431
of the gold standard. Oh, that's right, the Christmas episode of the gold standard. And yeah, we are in the calendar year, and no one's dead yet. That's a good sign. We have not had any. I mean, we had that terrible tragedy in Turkey, but yes. Obviously, but we didn't have any celebrity. Well, maybe Mariah Carey's career. Not that it wasn't. Not that it probably was on life support at this point, anyway. But
yeah, that was quite the show.
It was quite the show.
And we have quite the show for you here tonight. So, how was your time? I feel like we were just here. I mean, it feels like we did this recently, but it has been 2 weeks. Of course, hope everyone enjoyed our Christmas episode. Seems like we were saved yet again, Scott, for the 30 in a row. The precipice of defeat and demise,
right.
But we survived yet again.
Yes, we did.
Withstood Ben Morse, but here we
That's
are.
Right.
So hopefully everyone has a chance to check that out. A lot of work goes into that.
So. We withstood Kevin Kelly and his cynical narration.
yes, we did. So hopefully everyone enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun to do, as always, so... And here we are. We're back in MSG. But how are you? How was your festivities? Doing okay?
It was a good time. It was a good time. New Year's Eve. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Facebook page where I saw a picture of myself and D'Amato and the doctor with our fine German grapefruit beverage that we all like, and we have plenty left over for future events. JR, if you
now, did you just keep that hat on and go deliver papers in the morning?
That's right. I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did. And no, it was a good time, a good crowd, and then I pretty much relaxed for the next couple of days, kind of chilled out, kind of recharged the batteries to get back into the groove today. You? Would you go across the street, I think, right?
Yeah, just walked right across the street. It was the best New Year's Eve commute home ever, so just...
safest one, too.
About 20 steps across the street, so no, worked out well. My parents came over good. And just hung out at our house, and we went across the street and had some Chinese food, watched Mariah Carey sing, and watched the balls drop, as El Gigante would say.
Right.
And had a good time. But here we are, 2017. This is always a weird stretch of the year, you know? I mean, it goes by fast, but it also drags this January, February. You got basketball and everything else going on. NFL playoffs, but really just I'm antsy now to get to the spring. Get WrestleMania coming, get out back out Flanagan Court, play some hoops. So this is that tough stretch now of the year.
Yes, very envious of you because I've been really jonesing to run up and down, which I know you've done the last few days.
I'm hoping my back is better by March.
Dipping into the fountain of youth. It's like playing winter ball in the Dominican or whatever for baseball. Here you are playing in what is this, like not the D League? What is it? It's the reverse NBA Summer League. You play in the NBA Winter League.
That's what it was. My lord.
The arsonist Winter League.
I definitely pushed it. I'm definitely too old to be doing what I did yesterday. But here I am, second episode in a row, struggling with lower abdominal pain, but I'm
yes.
fighting through it. So yeah, hopefully we'll be in the spring before we know it. But here we are, Scott, in the winter, and we're back inside the Vintage Vault.
We are. We're back inside our new offices on 33rd Street. Mm-hmm. And let us dive right in because we are post WrestleMania 1. I'm really excited about this stretch of shows, JR, because in the past, whether it's here in the vault or written or whatever, usually we do WrestleMania 1 and then we scoot all the way ahead to the Wrestling Classic in November. And the couple of Saturday Night's main events, but we had no idea what was going on in between. Well, this is fantastic because now we're going to go month to month into the Mecca and see what was going on between April and say October of 1985. We have the one science main event coming up shortly. But then other than that, it's pretty much straight live events / house shows. Mm-hmm. So I'm fascinated what you and I are going to embark on over the next, probably what, six shows?
Yeah.
Six or seven vaults.
A lot of it ties in too on the Network Adventure series that we're doing on PlayStation.com. Yep. We're currently in those TNTs that follow this. So we have a lot of focus on the spring and summer of 85 heading in toward the fall. So it'll be, like you said, it'll be interesting to see how things play out. And, some of these storylines actually carried on more than you realize from WrestleMania 1. It seemed like a lot mm-hmm. ended, but many of them actually continued on. So we'll be touching on those as well.
Yes. All right. Why don't we hop in, get started.
Okay.
April 22nd, 1985. Live from our new digs, JR, our new offices, Madison Square Garden. In New York City. Crowd, 18,000, probably a sellout. No Felt Forum, no Paramount or Theater, whatever it's called at that time. I guess Felt Forum still. Did you notice, JR, the new fancy schmancy open? Mm-hmm. You and I watched the same clip. A little music now. Gorilla doing like bump, like billboards. Isn't that the weirdest thing?
It was interesting.
Reading Gorilla do manufacturers Hanover and all those stuff you'd hear on Yankee broadcasts or Mets broadcasts. By manufacturers Hanover, by what was the other one? Castrol Motor Oil, which and all the weird, these weird, what was the other one? Ivory Soap. This is the strangest thing here. Gorilla do ads. It's so strange.
It was neat. It's definitely these versions we're watching are a lot of fun because as we've chronicled before, we have all the real music left in and everything from beginning to end on these broadcasts. So it's been a cool trip back in time.
It absolutely has. And, they kind of snazzed up, and they more promoted the building and the network in the opens now. Now they added, shots of the Knicks and the Rangers and I think, Chris Ever, because they used to do the Masters tennis series at the Garden and of course, Tonight Pro Wrestling. Obviously televised on the MSG Network, your attendance, your commentators, Gorilla Monsoon and Mean Gene.
Yep.
He does a few interviews later on. But, all right, well, there's our stage setting. Uh-huh. Let us go now to report Les Sultans.
Okay. He calls us back to a couple weeks ago, Scott, and just listed some of the places he was able to dig up that showed WrestleMania. Close circuit. The Boston Garden, the Worcester Centrum, the Plymouth Memorial Building, the Lowell Memorial Auditorium, City Hall Memorial Auditorium in Portland, Maine, and Chestnut Street School in Nashua, New Hampshire. And he said in other local theaters and arenas. So
yes,
those are the ones he was able to dig up.
Yep, and as I mentioned on that show, the Warner Theater in Torrington, Connecticut, because that was discussed in the True Story of WrestleMania DVD, mm-hmm. Blu-ray. So.
Just a sampling of buildings that were showing the show. All right, championship roll call. Hulk Hogan, still our WWF champion, 455 days into his reign. Greg Valentine, Intercontinental Champion, 210 days. The Foreign Legion, as he calls it, Nikolai Volkoff and Iron Sheik, 22 days into their reign. Will they recall that officially? Maybe.
I doubt it. I seriously doubt it.
And Wendy Richter, 22 days into her reign. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Buddy Rogers was originally scheduled to team with Rene Goulet against the British Bulldogs on this show. I don't know if that's true or not. That's what's
according to Graham,
Buddy Rose.
Johnny Rods was supposed to sub. Buddy Rose is being subbed by somebody else.
Okay, I'm guessing Buddy Rose is what he meant when he put Buddy Rogers there. I'd be surprised if they were rolling in Buddy Rogers for a tag team job.
Had he died already? Probably not. Right?
No, I don't think he's dead yet. But
no,
I don't see him coming out of retirement for this match here. So yeah, Buddy Rose. okay, there you go. That's it.
That would have been fantastic. Could you imagine?
There's always something. We always got to fact check the facts on that thing. All right. So where do we lead off here, Scott?
All right. I gotta look at this because for some reason, how long did he live till? All right. He died in 92.
Okay, I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We open with a fascinating opener here, JR, because it's two guys. One guy who's a bona fide jobber, making his second appearance, and another guy who actually is very successful outside of America, but is at the moment part of the WWE canon officially. Tell us about our first matchup, our curtain jerker.
First matchup is the Cobra taking on Barry O. And under the mask of the Cobra is George Takano from Yamaguchi, Japan.
I thought you were going to say Aaron George as Cobra Commander.
Yes, that's Takano began his wrestling career in 1977 in Stampede Wrestling, won the British Commonwealth Mid-Heavyweight Championships at Timber of 83. A couple of months later, defeated Davey Boy Smith for the vacant NWA World Junior Heavyweight title. December 84, won the WWF Junior Heavyweight title from Dynamite Kid. Loses title to Hiro Saito in Hiroshima, May of 85, regained it 2 months later in Osaka. Title would be vacated in October 85 when New Japan separated from the WWF auspices. In 1986, moved on to wrestle in IWGP, removed his mask, and began wrestling under his real name. Would wrestle in the Super World of Sports during the early 90s, which also had a relationship with the WWF. Allowed him to wrestle some of the superstars of the time, including Bret Hart and several WWF tag teams. When he teamed up with his younger brother. Takano retired from active competition in 2004 and began his own promotion, Fight Spirit Wrestling, FSR. So, there you go. Sense of background on the Cobra. This is quite a bit of international flavor on the show, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. So she says nowadays they always go on that European tour after WrestleMania. I kind of found it interesting that they almost did a European import here on this show.
Right.
And Japanese, obviously. I should say foreign import. So, Gene and Gorilla on the call as usual. Interesting opener here. The WWF Junior Champion, Cobra, leading things off. Cobra has an interesting sports coat on, Scott. I don't know if you picked up on that. I was curious.
He does, yes. He looked very Miami Vice-ish.
Yes. Odd. Barry takes control right away, hammering away before slamming Cobra, dropping an elbow for two. Barry gets a chin lock, quickly releases and clubs away with some more slinging Cobra hard to the floor. Barry catches him coming back in and yanks his neck across the top rope before shoving him to the floor. Cobra forces his way back in, but Barry goes right to work and goes back on offense, picking up a near fall. Barry hits a hard power slam and hooks a front face lock. Cobra twists free and turns into an armbar to a big pop. Cobra takes Barry down and drops a leg before slugging away, but Barry slugs him back with a right hand. Cobra comes back with a sunset flip for two and locks in a head scissors on Barry, allowing him time to regroup. Barry works free and grabs a side headlock, but Cobra reverses that into a back suplex and gets a small package for a close near fall. Barry drives Cobra to the corner with some knees, but Cobra takes him over with a backdrop and goes to work on the arm. Cobra lands an elbow off the middle rope as Gene questions how tight the ropes are, but Barry levels him on a charge and heads to the middle rope, but then misses a splash. Cobra pounces with a flurry and hits a leaping leg lariat for two that gets broken up when Barry gets his foot on the rope. The match resets from there with Barry stalling and begging off, and that led into a cheap shot right hand and an elbow drop for two. Gorilla has been chastising the pin covers of both men throughout this one. Barry twists into a spinning toe hold, but Cobra pops and flips out of it, cracking Barry with a leaping kick and then a crossbody for two. Cobra kicks Barry to the floor and hits a slingshot planche off to a pop. Cobra suplexes Barry back inside but comes up empty on a senton bomb. Cobra recovers and hits a head scissors takeover into a roll up for the win to retain the title. I thought it started kind of odd and Barry dominated a lot, but I thought it really got cooking by the end. I liked all the ebbing and flowing, a lot of trading of control. It was choppy, though. Which stunted the grade in my eyes, but I thought Barry hung in with Cobra and looked pretty good overall. There were just enough high-flying moves to make Cobra stand out like he should. That was a nice treat to see him to open the show, but I was a little disappointed. I actually thought it would have been better if it was just a quick Cobra sprint squash where he just unloads the arsenal and then finishes off Barry. Like, I thought they slowed things down too much for an opener featuring the junior champion, and I just went with two stars here. So I was slightly disappointed, but it was cool to see Cobra on the show.
And our time of that match, 13:20, and that is a theme that we're going to delve into as this show progresses. I don't know who booked on this night or who had the book, the sheet, if you will. But they treated – I feel like they treated this house show differently than the usual MSG house show. And I'll get into that as the matches progress. But I didn't mind this match. It was a little clunky for what would be – what you could say is the 80s version of cruiserweights.
Right.
I wouldn't consider Barry O much of a cruiserweight. He kind of looked like a fucking – he kind of looked like a rock star that was past his prime. But that was fine. I mean – I do think it would have been nice to see the Cobra kind of be a little sleeker in the ring, and it kind of glorified the squash instead of Barrio having to do a lot of clunky offense that kind of killed the flow of the match. I agree with Mean Gene. Why didn't the Cobra have a belt? I wonder if this is one of those weird world class things where you just invent titles and pretend that nobody notices. But it would have been cool to see a belt. But I thought it was fine, and you know, the Cobra wins. Good pop from the crowd. But, yeah, I'll give it 2 stars as well. It definitely was not as fluid as you would have expected from someone like Cobra in the opener. It was a fun match. It wasn't atrocious, but it definitely, with a little tweaking, could have been a lot better than it ended up being. So the Cobra retains let me just make sure I want to officially say the belt right.
The Junior Heavyweight Championship. It actually was existed from 1967 through 1985. Safari DeFazio. No, Johnny DeFazio had it a bunch of times in here. So,
I can't wait. This is going to be a great match. I'm going to knock you out, and then we're going to jump you off the top rope. I'm going to jump off the top rope, and I'm going to have some potato chips. It's going to be a great match. Thanks. Bye.
It actually started in September 65, but it looks like maybe it rebooted after that. I don't know. There's a lot of trading back and forth until it got vacated in 72. Brought back in 78 when Carlos Jose Estrada defeated Tony Garea to reestablish the title. And from there, bounced around. That's when Tatsumi Fujinami had it, and then eventually Tiger Mask and Black Tiger, and then Dynamite Kid, Cobra, Saito Cobra, and then be vacated in late 85. Like we said earlier, when New Japan and WWF split off, so and the belt would actually be brought back as a trophy for the first ever Super J Cup, won by Wild Pegasus in April of '94. So,
yeah, we all know who that was.
Yes,
and this is something that a lot of younger fans may not even realize that indeed, the World Wrestling Federation did have a relationship with New Japan. A lot of people probably don't know that. You know, a lot of these relationships obviously were leftovers from Vince Sr. I'm sure Vince wasn't just going to cut the cord. I mean, New Japan's New Japan. I mean, it's a wealth of unbelievable talent. You're not just going to cut that loose just to be a, you know, pain in the ass. They're not, New Japan is not like, you know, Portland or the AWA or whatever. You're talking about a pretty big promotion with a lot of talent that you could make a lot of good money on and have good exchanges. So,
well, the beef sub shows like this too. It's a hook for these shows where, we have a title match, but if you really want to beef up the card coming off Mania, you know, maybe wondering how many people are going to come. You know, we just had the show, a couple weeks ago. But even other shows, when they wanted to kind of pop a house or pop a rating, they bring in this talent from overseas to help fill out the card a bit and mix things up. So I thought it was a cool appearance. And beyond him just being the junior champion, it was just cool to see Cobra and promote him that way. Like I said, I just wish they kind of let him open the, you know, empty the tank a little bit more versus stay, you know, I don't want to say they stayed grounded because they didn't. But I just thought Barry took too much offense on this one.
Yeah, he did, and he just broke up what could have been a very smooth match, which brings me, which brings us JR to our second match, where I feel the problem. We had the same problem, not as much because the two guys are both expert workers. One of them is an incredibly expert worker. The other is just rock solid, and a veteran of our vaults now. But another guy who we talk about mysteriously in various shows around here, both on the PTBN Wrestling Network and definitely on the PWO feed. Tell us about our two guys in match number 2.
Well, our buddy Matt Bourne, who we debated about quite a bit at WrestleMania.
Yes.
And the month before as well. Battles Tatsumi Fujinami, another import here from Japan, the legendary one, former junior heavyweight champion. Mm-hmm. And of course, Mr. Fujinami began wrestling at the age of 17 in the Japanese Wrestling Association, made his debut May of 71 under the tutelage of Antonio Inoki. When Inoki was fired from the JWA in late 71, Fujinami and other wrestlers left as well, helped Inoki form New Japan Pro Wrestling. During his early years in NJPW, he was primarily used as an opponent for debuting rookies. Began making a name for himself in the late 70s, traveled to the UWA in Mexico and Jim Crockett, entered the WWF in 1978, winning the junior heavyweight title. which he took back to Japan. The title would become the premier junior heavyweight championship in Japan. In late 81, began wrestling in the heavyweight division. That would be the late 80s until he would see success there. From 88 to 90, captured several titles, including the NWA Pacific Northwest heavyweight title, the WCWA World Heavyweight title, and the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Late in 1990, won the NWA World title from Ric Flair, becoming the first wrestler to hold both the IWGP and NWA championships at the same time. Lost that back to Flair at WCW Super Bowl I. In 2006, after 35 years of the company, Fujinami left New Japan, began running Muga World Pro Wrestling, which has since changed his name to Tradition. In March of 15, Fujinami was, of course, inducted to the WWE Hall of Fame and became the official ambassador for the company in Japan. So, cool to see Fujinami here. Of course, Scott, we saw him a few weeks ago during that vape-freezing videotape wink session we had with the good old Will from Texas.
Yes,
so, that was interesting. Of course, seeing some more vintage Fujinami versus kind of the glimpse we get here. So, another treat, another import. Before I get into the match, were you surprised that they rolled him out second here? That they have these guys back-to-back and that they didn't kind of save him for later on the card?
Well, I'll tell you something. I'll mention it later in the show, but I have this was one time where I wish – and this is another reason why I'm asking who actually had the sheet on this night, because I have a match based on who's in the building on this night. I don't care, face, heel. I would have put these two guys together and just let them roll. And I'll get to it later on in the show, but definitely I would have not put him second. Mm. I would easily have not put him. These guys are well-known. I mean, we're talking 1985, even for WWF fans. I mean, people still read PWI and know what's going on.
But he had been in the WWF. So. I mean, he was a junior champion. I mean, he had been in MSG before, so he was known.
Right.
A known commodity.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. And I'm saying for those that may not have seen him live, they still knew who he was.
Right.
And I think it's kind of crazy to have him this high in the card. And this is not a knock on Matt Bourne, obviously. When you get into your analysis.
Well, they could have even kept the match. I'm just saying later in the show. Like, I was surprised they had him second from the open. And back-to-back, right. Japanese imports back-to-back on the card. That's what surprised me.
I know where I would have put this match, too. But I'll get to that in a minute. But go ahead.
All right. So, good spot for Bourne. Showcase match. Show that he can do a great job. Make Fujinami come off as a star here to the WWF fans. Get a semi-handshake into a lockup with a clean break to start things off. Bourne slings Fujinami into the buckle and slings away, but Fujinami recovers and stiffs Bourne with a forearm, sending him bailing to the floor. Gene butchers Fujinami's name before putting over his body in fighting stance. Gorilla discusses the popularity of wrestling in Japan as Fujinami grabs a tight side headlock. Bourne slugs his way free and pelts Fujinami with a knee to the head and a few chops before hitting a knee drop. Bourne pours it on from there, hammering away before grabbing a long chin lock. Gene and Gorilla discuss the celebrities that are in attendance until Fujinami breaks free and lands a dropkick to the face, but Bourne keeps his composure, rolls Fujinami through with the head scissors. Bourne stays in control, choking away with his boots and the bottom rope, and then working him over in the corner, as Gene again comments on the loose ropes. He's obsessed with the loose ropes tonight.
I know, Jesus. Idiotic.
Bourne hits a vertical suplex, but finally makes a mistake and he misses a knee drop. Fujinami pops up and lands some strikes as he starts to target the hamstring before drilling Bourne with a dropkick for two. Bourne would catch Fujinami with his head down and hit a gut-wrench suplex for a near fall. Fujinami dodges the right hand, and then Bourne hits him with a clothesline before twisting him into a German suplex into a bridge for the win. I was, again, expecting a little bit more, Scott. Technically, it was fine. There was no choppiness or screw-ups. Bourne did a nice job on offense. The finish was nice, but I feel like it never got into that next gear to make things crackle for the live crowd. Like I felt like it was just kind of there. It was a nice exhibition, but it never really... it never really switched gears into that next stage of what they could do. It just felt like a routine house show match in many ways. Not anything special, despite the involvement of Fujinami. So to me, it wasn't presented in any kind of special way. And maybe because we're picking it up here, we haven't seen a lot of him. I mean, I didn't dig back to see how often he was in MSG. Maybe it was more routine. But to me, it felt like it was our first time seeing him. It felt like it should have been a bigger deal and not quite. What I thought. But I mean, it looks like I'm digging through like 80, 81. I mean, it looks like he was there quite a bit. 82. Actually, hang on. That's Fuji. Let me see. Fujinami. No, okay. So he was in 82 and then 85. And this is his first appearance. He was in a bunch in 80 and 81. And then it was his first appearance since 82. So, I mean, he hadn't been there in almost 3 years. So a little surprising that it didn't seem hyped even on this night, like his, it just seemed like it was just kind of there. So that surprised me.
Yeah, how I worded in my comments is that this could have been a much better match if there wasn't so much quote WWF crap. Like, instead of treating – they should have treated this match a little differently than you would your everyday run-of-the-mill MSG house show match. I feel like this match needed to have some more juice to it, have some more pomp with it, and kind of give Matt Bourne his due, you know, because he's a good worker. He dyed his hair ultra blonde for this one. He was definitely a little more platinum than he was at WrestleMania. But, I mean, it's Fujinami. I mean, come on, you know? I would have definitely have kind of changed the thinking of this match here and given it a little different spin and have had Fujinami kind of, you know, rock Bourne around a little bit, let him get his offense in. I mean, we saw Fujinami a year earlier in that incredible 10-man in New Japan. Mm-hmm. And he, I mean, they were just stiffing the shit out of each other. And I think, I feel like Matt Bourne was trying to do that. But, you know, WWF, you can only go so far with that kind of match. You don't want to freak the fans out at the Garden. They're not really, you know, that. Again, they know who he is, but, you know, New Japan fans think a little differently and are used to different kinds of matches.
It just felt like it was – I mean, maybe it was meant to be more of a showcase, reintroduction to the fans, but I just feel like the fanfare wasn't there. And you could have kept Bourne. Would have liked to see this – I don't know. I don't know how they could have done it because I know it's not easy to get him back there, but even if they could have at the last show, like – hyped it or had Bourne call him out and challenge him, and then he comes over for the, you know, like something special. Instead, he just kind of rolls out here, and it's almost like it almost feels like a pre-show, the Cobra and this. You know what I mean? Like, it was this, okay, mm-hmm. Here's our, we're showcasing our Japanese relationship with New Japan, and here we go. And okay, now we're on to our real card. You know what I mean? Like, it almost felt like
a leftover.
Like, yeah, no, or just like an interpromotional exhibition match. It didn't feel like there was many stakes. And exhibition matches are fine if it's a real exhibition, like if you're really showing off. And this didn't feel like Fujinami getting to show off a lot. And same with Cobra. So to me, you needed just a little bit of story there or let them open up, you know, open the throttle a bit. So, I mean, maybe it's just me being a little more unfamiliar with Fujinami. I mean, maybe this, but from, I mean, like you said, we saw in that Japanese 10 man, which, you know, from what Will and others have said, is arguably one of the greatest matches of all time. So it's kind of an unfair comparison. But
Right.
You know, when I saw Cobra and Fujinami back to back on this card, I was pretty excited, and I ended up just being slightly disappointed. So maybe I had to just recalibrate my expectations a bit. But
yeah, no, I mean, again, I had no problem with it, and I think Matt Bourne was a good opponent for him. Our official match time 11:25. I'm gonna give it 2.5. I would love to have given it 3, but it doesn't really reach 3. And let me tell you something. I loved watching Fujinami like crank the bridge up when he was lifting his feet, and even Mean Gene actually pointed it out one time. He actually points out something that makes sense instead of the fucking ropes, and he's like, you know, he's cranking on, he's pushing his feet, and he's cranking on the bridge, and I mean, it was a great looking finisher. And I'm gonna give Matt Bourne his due. I mean, he did try to kind of work with Fujinami in his style, excuse me, but there's only so much you could do before you put the WWF tint on the match, and I think that's what kind of kills it in that aspect. So Tatsumi Fujinami wins again in 11:25, but I would have probably rebooked this card a little bit, and I would have had a better opponent for him if you think outside the box. But we'll get to that in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Next up, JR, we go backstage, right? Our first backstage interview?
Yes, Gene does head backstage to chat with King Kong Bundy and Jimmy Hart. Pretty standard interview. They put over Bundy's size and claim a win tonight is just another stepping stone to a match with Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan all the way. Which brings us to our third match, JR. Speaking of King Kong Bundy taking on, making his return after
trip to the hospital, perhaps?
Yes, actually. The Sweeter returns.
Yes, he's back.
Good old Sweet Hansen.
Ugh. Can't go wrong with the Swede. The Swede dog.
So, there we go. Sweet Hansen.
All right, big battle of the hosses here is the Big Sweeter back to challenge the massive Bundy, who's been destroying guys, of course, thus far. Gorilla debates Bundy's weight.
That's funny. I thought you were going to keep that going underneath you while you're doing your notes. There you go.
I can if you want.
Gorilla, and then he gets him in the corner. Sing it with it.
Gorilla debates Bundy's weight. During announcements, and we still have that great crowd buzz of Bundy as he ambles out to the ring. Sweet is pretty locked in here. Doesn't seem very intimidated at all. Of course, as we know, not a big seller. After a stalemate lockup, Bundy lays in a shot across Sweet's chest, but Sweet immediately retaliates. Sweet grabs a side headlock as Gene busts on Jimmy Hart a bit. Sweet tries for a running shoulder block, but Bundy didn't budge. Bundy then goes to the eyes and starts to hammer away, keeping Sweet off balance and reeling. Swede finally has enough and bows up at Bundy, stalking right through his right hands and laying in his own as the crowd is just going crazy. Bundy shrugs them off and then squashes Swede with an avalanche and drops a big elbow for the win and only gets a three count. And of course, Scott, the good old Sweeter, kicks out immediately after the three. Asshole. This wasn't as fun as our previous squashes. That though meandered much too long. It was cool seeing Bundy struggle with another big man before just overpowering him for the win. So in many ways, it was impressive. But again, I thought Swede just gave too much. No one wants to see that jackass fight back against Bundy.
Really?
And then kicking out after three, I hate so much. So, I don't know. For a guy that's getting this push like Bundy, we don't need Swede fucking hands on kicking out at the three count. So I didn't care for that. But the push for Bundy continues to be very well executed. This is one of my favorite things that we're following on this journey that we've restarted is watching this month-to-month growth of Bundy. And we've seen two, like, just murder-death squashes, and now this, where, again, he's got to struggle, but eventually he's able to overpower another big man.
Yes.
He kicks out at the three count.
Shortest match of the evening, JR, just 427. What do you have for a rating here?
Oh, a dud.
A dud. I'm going to give it a dud as well because
the vintage Swede dud.
Yeah, Swede dud. It's the sweetest dud. Fucking Sweeter. Come on, man. The guy weighs twice the size of you, and you're a fucking old fart with stupid fucking overalls. Just take the job and move on, will you? Christ's sakes, you're lucky you're getting a paycheck still. Just so sad. Just crush him. Just crush him.
Mm-hmm.
Bundy's looking so great here right now. God forbid he goes for the – imagine if he went for the five count and Swede forgot.
I know, right? It wouldn't shock me. He probably refused to lay down for five. No, I can't do that. Gonna protect the Sweeter's gimmick, brother.
Brother. Gotta protect me for those TNT skits where I'm eating Hillbilly Jim's mom's food.
Where I'm eating Hillbilly Jim's mom. Hillbilly, we've got something to tell you.
Why do you think we're from Mud Lick?
We have one more appearance of the Sweeter. I know we thought this was maybe his last one, but he's got one more in a couple months. So
okay. Yeah, I mean, Bundy did the best he could. I mean, I'm not going to fault him. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? It is what it is. Not much more to say. It was a sloppy squash, not as dominant, but I mean, I will give the Sweeter this. He's not, you know, fucking Terry Gibbs or any of these other humps or Jose Luis Rivera. I don't mind a little pushback because he is, you know, not, you know, he's probably a notch below SD Jones, but a notch above, you know, fucking Paul Christie. But kicking out of the three, that's bullshit. Sorry, this isn't 1978. You're not getting a title shot. So just do your job. So King Kong Bundy wins again. Your match time 4:27, the shortest match of the evening, which says a lot actually. And Bundy wins and continues his ascent, if you will. All right, next up we have our first tag match of the evening, and actually pretty solid little tag here with another up and coming brand new tag team on the scene, JR, and two experienced veterans. Who do we have?
The first appearance, Scott, of the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid here at MSG. Both teams' members began their wrestling careers in the 1970s in England. Two were invited to Stampede Wrestling by Bruce Hart, started a bitter rivalry in the promotion. 1984, they went to New Japan to continue their feud along with Cobra over the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship. After wrapping up their feud, the duo began teaming as the British Bulldogs, soon leaving New Japan for the rival All Japan. McMahon purchased Stampede in 84. They joined the WWF and then continued touring with All Japan, but later in the year would become exclusive to the company. And of course, as we mentioned earlier, Johnny Rods, who is teaming here with Rene Goulet, is replacing Buddy Rose, substituting in for this match. Not Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, but Buddy Rose. So Bulldogs here are set to battle this heel jobber dream team. Big pop for the Bulldogs as we get underway. Goulet makes a big to-do about his glove as Gorilla gets in the usual Michael Jackson comment. We should be keeping track of those, I think, every single time. After quite a bit of stalling, Goulet and Dynamite open things up and work on the mat. Dynamite shows off with a kip-up into a quick-paced flurry, ending with an arm drag. Davey tags in, gets a roll up for two, but Rods pops in the ring and slings him outside. Davey gets caught up in the ropes, hops back in, and dropkicks Rods from behind in a really fun sequence. Davey keeps the heat up, hitting Rods with a missile dropkick, and then Dynamite flies in with a dropkick to cut off Goulet from interfering. Dynamite hits Rods with a snap suplex and gut wrench suplex for two, and then grabs a chin lock, but Rods lands a quick shot and takes over. Goulet comes in with a slam, and then they start to quick tag and double team. Rods whiffs on a shot, and Dynamite tags with a quick quickly take control of Davey as well and do a nice job maintaining him with some basic offense. Rod sits an awkward back elbow, but Davey turns it tight and hits a vertical suplex before tagging out. Gorilla gets all over the referee here for allowing the heels to freely double team as they again take over on Davey yet again. Davey makes a quick comeback, beats it around both guys. He gets a power slam on Rods for one. Davey then puts Goulet on his shoulders, and Dynamite leaps off him for a splash on Rods for the win. That was a really fun tag match. Brisk pace. It was a good showcase of the Bulldogs. When the heels were in control, the match kept humming because they kept quick tagging and had awareness of what was going on. The finish was really good, too, and that was a good, strong debut bout for the Bulldogs. I go 2 stars on this one, Scott.
I'm going to go 2.5 on this. I thought this match was great. Your official time, 8:16. I thought this match was great. And I'll tell you something. Say what you want about the jobber pool in 85 WWF, but Rene Goulet and Johnny Rods are two good workers. They're company men. I enjoyed watching them together.
And they're above. It's hard to call them jobbers because there's two levels of jobbers, right? There's the real, we talked about this before, the real bums. And then this next tier up. Guys like this that were competitive jobbers, where they would win the undercard match. So I don't lump them in with jobbers. These are quality veterans that know how to work. They could put on a match. They just didn't have enough to elevate to the next level. But then, I mean, you got the real job guys were the Rusty Brooks and guys like that.
The sweeters in the back jugging the moonshine there.
Right.
Ugh, there we go. Fuck that Fat Bundy shit. Absolutely. And I thought this was a great match. And I think these two guys were good for the Bulldogs. Bulldogs, obviously, very stiff workers anyway. Goulet and Rods aren't going to fuck around. So I think they went in. I think it was a great 8-minute match. Nice work. Fun back and forth. And the Bulldogs are here, and I think they're a great import and a great addition to the tag division. There's really not much to say. I'll give it 2.5 as well. It was just really solid. And I love watching this second tier of jobbers work together. I shouldn't say that. Second tier of veterans working with these young guys. Now, this is the opposite of what we just saw before. Renee and Johnny gave, the unpredictable one, gave, Davey Boy and Dynamite a good run for 8 minutes. But in the end, did the right thing. Right. Whereas Sweeter bumped around a little bit, had to get his offense in, and then kicked out at like 3 1/8. I mean, that's
right.
Bullshit.
And no selling a lot of shit. Like, no, these guys are out there busting their asses, and it's a cohesive match. And you got to separate too. We're a lot in the mindset of TV world and everything else, but it's okay sometimes that these matches aren't straight squashes. That these veterans do get some offense in. I know we talked about it earlier with Cobra, but in a match here, you think, oh, Bulldogs need to look strong. They still look strong. They can still get beaten up a bit and they battle back and win. And that's where the benefit comes from, building up a Rods or a Goulet, winning sometimes on the undercard, picking up opening opening show matches, stuff like that, so it can have them better positioned to be able to put over guys like this, and it looks believable when they sneak in some offense. You can't have a true jobber eat up 2 or 3 minutes of offense and be believable, but a guy like Goulet or Rods easily can. And I thought they looked pretty good together. I thought they actually worked well as a unit. In another lifetime, maybe they actually move out the card as a team a little bit. I don't know. But, yes, the Bulldogs are a great import, a great addition. I am interested, though, Scott, how they mesh with Wyndham and Rotundo. Because I don't want to say they seem similar. Kind of a similar act, though. They don't really have the I don't want to say beefcake look, but like the pinup model look that Rotundo and Wyndham are kind of pinned with.
Right.
But high energy, up and coming young face team, a lot of good, a lot of good tag work and chemistry. So it'll be interesting to see if they affect the push of Wyndham and Rotundo at all as we move along.
Yeah, I am too. Davey Boy and because there's really, I feel like Wyndham and Rotundo are more even in terms of ability. In terms of wrestling type, like obviously Davey Boy's the power guy and Dynamite's the technician / high flyer. Whereas Wyndham and Rotundo, they're both kind of the same. I mean, Rotundo's a little bit more technically sound because he was in he's a college wrestler. Mm-hmm. Barry's a little bit more of a brawler. So I would be curious to see how they would mesh in a match together. I really would because
not even a match together. I just mean how is it going to affect their push.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because they're both baby faces and they're both similar types of wrestlers. All
right,
that's right. A good point, too.
And I mean,
but even if they did,
Wyndham and Rotundo have been here a little bit longer, obviously they've already been champions, but I'm curious if they get kind of shoved away for the Bulldogs or if the Bulldogs are going to take some time to work their way up the ladder. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would think the latter. I think that the latter of the latter. I think they would take their time because they're both really good wrestlers, and you could put the Bulldogs against a bunch of guys for a while and keep them fresh because they're over with the fans. So the British Bulldogs make their MSG debut, and it's a successful one with a win over Rene Goulet and Johnny Rods. I also give it 2.5 stars, and your runtime is 8:16. Okay, next up, singles match with another one of our favorites and Mean Gene's favorite inanimate object, taking on one of the stalwarts coming in, an import from the South. And, yeah, pretty exciting one here in terms of Mean Gene commentary and general overall talent. What do we got?
Well, it's our third time here, Scott, seeing Ricky Steamboat, of course, debuted early in March. Then we saw him at WrestleMania, 2-0, going in here against our old buddy, Moondog Spot. Of course, I think we'll be seeing him as the true stalwart of the MSG shows. Good matchup on paper. Spot's been solid since we've been watching. Steamboat's always fantastic. And, of course, Scott, Gorilla and Gene talk all about that bone, and they believe it's a brand new one that Spotty's carrying around. So they also put over how nice Steamboat is. Steamboat takes over early on, chopping Spot around. And actually, I thought it was interesting when they commented how nice he was, because if you remember, Bourne called that out at Mania, and they put over before Steamboat himself has said that he wants to incorporate more of a mean streak into his run here in the WWF. I think, was it TNT where he said that? Remember, so the photographs of him in the gym and all that. So it's definitely a focus of Steamboat coming in here, where he's talked about, I'm a nice guy. I know I'm a nice guy. I got to work on my mean streak. So it's something that he's called out. His opponents have talked about, and now the announcers are talking about it. So it's clearly going to be one of his hooks as we move forward.
Right.
So he takes over early on, chopping Spot around, knocking him to the floor. Spot yanks him out as well, hammers away, but Steamboat slings him into the post. Back inside, Spot begs off, but Steamboat goes right at him with fists. Spot goes to the eyes to take over and rams him into the buckles before grinding him down to a chin lock. Spot keeps the pressure on, clubbing away and going for covers while mixing in chin locks. Both men get wiped out when they collide on a Spot charge, and after slowly recovering, Steamboat hits a crossbody for two. Steamboat goes for a slam, but he collapses under the weight, and Spot hits a shoulder breaker for two. Spot goes up top, but Steamer slams him off and follows with a chop. Steamboat gets fired up and hits a swinging neck breaker, but Spot counters him to an inverted atomic drop. Steamboat chops his way back into it and hits a high cross body for the win. I thought this was a rock solid match, as always, Scott. Spot continues to be a good hand on these shows. Steamboat gets to show off his selling and offense, and is a good way to have Steamboat continue to climb up the ladder. I went 2 stars right across the board so far tonight, pretty much.
Yes.
Just a bunch of solid matches. I mean, nothing that's going to rock your socks or stand out, but, you know, veteran guys that know how to put together a basic match like this in front of a crowd like this in MSG. And again, I like putting Steamboat in with guys like Bourne with Spot, because they're able to get in quality offense to let him show off his selling, which is a key in the Steamboat package. So when you get a guy like Spot that is a quality heel worker, that knows how to transition between, you know, rest holds and into strikes and time, allows Steamboat to time his comebacks. I thought that helped them mesh well, and it let Steamboat show off his arsenal, and then flies back to win. And I thought this structure of this match, and how long was this one, Scott?
This match was 7:24.
Yeah, I feel like the structure of this one felt more like maybe what Cobra could have been. You know, like a little bit of offense in the middle and then boom, boom, boom at the end and picks up the win. So maybe a little longer, but this structure felt more like what we should have saw there, where maybe Steamboat could have more of a grinding match. But I like how we're seeing these guys climb the ladder. We're seeing it with Bundy, and now we're seeing it with Steamboat, and the Bulldogs being introduced. And the best part about the company this time, Scott, and we're seeing it here, is the way they work. They have dedicated plans and paths for these guys. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's cool to see these guys debut, and what adds a lot in the way we've structured the show and doing the MSG house shows, we're getting to see the growth, because the MSG shows are a barometer of what's going on in the promotion. So we're seeing the month-to-month growth of these guys, whereas if we just did the pay-per-views or even the signage made events, you know, the jumps in time don't allow you to feel the gravity of how they worked their way up the card. And I think we're already seeing those dividends being paid and just watching the way Steamboat and Bundy have been introduced and worked up.
Yes, 100%. And Steamboat, I like that he hasn't really thought of his WWF persona yet, because he still has he actually had these alternate teal tights tonight.
Right.
And the swank satin jacket. I think that was his gym on the back. I mean, this match was fine, but, and you're going to think I'm probably nuts. You're probably going to say I'm thinking 2016 when I say this, but if you're the booker in the back, and you're, I mean, I know this card was probably set up, well, most of this match was probably set up ahead of time. Obviously, this is a little different because the last show in the building was WrestleMania, so it's not like this card was totally announced per se. Who in the back? I don't know who it was. I mean, maybe it was Vince, but it might have been somebody else. Maybe Pat. Didn't look at the room and go, why don't I put Steamboat and Fujinami out there? Face-face. Who cares? Let them shake hands. Who gives a shit?
So who do you have to win?
Who cares? Have a go to a draw.
Yeah, okay. I can get him on board with a draw. That would have been interesting. I mean, Fujinami didn't really need a showcase win. I think, yeah, him and Steamboat going 20 and shaking hands after could have really done a lot for both guys.
Yeah, and the match would have been fucking ridiculous, you know? Right. Having said that, I understand why they didn't, because, you know, back then you didn't really think outside the box like that in the WWE, particularly these MSG house shows. You know, bad guys are bad guys, good guys are good guys, and that's that. Sometimes I think you got to think outside the box, particularly when you bring in these imports that you don't get to see all the time. Any event, I like the match. I'll give it 2 stars as well, but these are fun 2 stars. You know what I mean? Like, they're good sprints. The commentary's been solid. We were talking about Swede before, and then I remember a gorilla going, looks like Spotty licked that bone clean. That's like, and I'm like, what the fuck is he saying? It looked like I had like masking tape or duct tape on it or something. It's so fucking weird.
Looks like Hibbly Jim's mom licks Swede's bone clean. gave him sepsis.
So that's right. And yeah, I mean, it was good. It was fine what it was. Spotty is Spotty. I mean, nobody can really argue that Spotty is, again, like at that level of, you know, Bourne and Goulet and Johnny Rods, that they're good guys who will put on good matches and you know, just entertain you for 7-8 minutes. Again, this one was 7:24, and you get a good match out of it. So I'll give this 2.5, but just thinking about the possibility of whoever was in the back just going, you know what, Vince, I got an idea. They're both good guys. Give the fans something a little different. Throw out Steamboat and Fujinami. Give them a 20-minute draw and see what the hell happens. Who knows? It may go down as one of the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, you had heel Brett again. Well, not really heel, but a couple years later, you'd have kind of tweener Brett against Mr. Perfect. Why not? You know, whatever. It's something different for the fans. You know, you can put the heel face kayfabe thing away for half an hour and just do something entertaining. But again, I mean –
yeah, I mean,
hindsight's 20/20.
Maybe if Steamboat was a little more established, you could see it, because I think they still saw these shows as ways to get him wins. But I do think a draw with Fujinami does just as much of him as a 8-minute win over Spot. So I know, I like the idea. I mean, I think it's unique, and as long as neither guy, because you're not going to bring Fujinami in here just to lose, and
no,
you can't have Steamboat lose yet. So I think a 20-minute draw to open the show would have been pretty interesting.
Yeah, and again, if this was to look at that, if you bring Fujinami, I mean, it's a shame that the New Japan deal fell through, because right, if you could bring Fujinami back in 86, holy shit, that would have been fantastic. But
right,
in any event, Ricky Steamboat gets the win over Spotty in 7:24. All right, next up, JR, our first, our only title match of the evening, but it is the big one.
Yeah, and before that, though, we actually get a highlight package, Scott.
Oh, yes, the local package on it. Let me think. It had to have been probably Channel Bruce Beck, so maybe Channel 4. Might have been NBC Channel 4, local New York, I think, if it was Bruce Beck. But, yeah, we had a montage. Tell us what it is.
Yeah, it was a local news story. It was a highlight package, first of Hulk Hogan set to Eye of the Tiger, followed by a news story on Hulk by Bruce Beck narrating his recent charity efforts. So, yeah, it was pretty neat. I like this little local flavor taste that we got to check out, and it's cool seeing the montage to Eye of the Tiger and seeing all the charity attention that Hogan was getting locally. And it seemed like the ties really were strong with New York, Scott, at this point. It was like New York in general seemed to be very proud to be tied in with the WWF. Like you said, they had them alongside the Knicks and the Rangers in that opener. They're doing local stories on Hogan. You know, like they seemed very tied in together. The legacies, and Brett Beck was actually with MSG at that point, 82-94. So the story was probably for MSG. It might have been for the show, but who knows? But it was for MSG. He was with them at that point.
Okay. I know later on in the 90s, I know he went to NBC4 at some point. But all right, interesting. Okay, which leads us, JR, to our match here.
Yes,
Yep. Good.
No, I'm sorry. Good.
No, I was going to say, as he puts the World Wrestling Federation championship belt on the line for the first time since the war to settle the score. What do we have tonight?
Well, of course, Hulk Hogan, our world champion, coming out of WrestleMania, saw several feuds going on. Main feud with Piper and Orton still raging, but he had this mini feud going on with different guys on and off. And the one tonight begins with the magnificent Morocco as the challenger, and a big time elevation for Morocco. Since he, you know, has been rebuilding himself since the layoff. So, again, a year ago or a year and a half ago, not a big elevation. Morocco's IC champion being pushed up the card. But we just saw him return. He kind of has that one reboot match, and then here he is, thrust into this post-Mania feud with Hogan. So, big-time stuff for him. Of course, alongside Mr. Fuji. Mega pop for Hogan and Eye of the Tiger as the roar just sustains as the match opens up. Just this buzz that just keeps going. Hogan wins a quick lockup and knocks Morocco to the floor with a high knee. Morocco laughs it off and slowly gets back in the ring as Hogan grabs him and works over the arm. Morocco tries to elbow his way free of the hold, but Hogan hangs on and then drops down and takes Morocco to modified STF and then into an armbar. The crowd is just bonkers here, consistently roaring the whole time. Morocco keeps trying to break free, but Hogan's able to get back to the arm every time. Hogan's all over Morocco, showing some really neat counters and reversals to keep the champ or the challenger off balance. Morocco finally is able to catch a glancing low blow to break the hold and then drills the hamstring and wrenches Hogan down to the mat. Morocco goes right to work on the leg with a very focused attack. The crowd is working hard to rally Hulk as he hobbles and kicks his way back into control. Hogan slams Morocco into the buckle and slams him with a clothesline. Hogan slams Morocco but whiffs on an elbow drop as Morocco catches him with the Asiatic spike. Morocco chokes away as Fuji gloats at ringside. Morocco then goes through the inverted pile driver, but Hogan kicks out of it to block before hulking up. MSG is exploding as Hogan gets to his feet and hammers away at the challenger and then kicks him to the floor with a big boot. Morocco yanks Hogan to the floor and the champ unloads punches, fending off Fuji as well, which allows Morocco to slug the champ from behind and crawl into the ring for the count-out win. I thought this was a really good hot finish to set up what will be a very hot rematch. I thought both guys cut a nice pace. Morocco was not lazy here at all, which, of course, is one of the big criticisms against him. I liked the fake comeback in between the heat segments. I thought the pile driver tease was well done, too, because he didn't hit it this time. You saved that for the rematch. I thought it was a good title match. I thought Morocco looked like a strong threat. The crowd was fucking insane, like super fantastic at this one. I went 3 stars on this, Scott. I thought it was a very strong, Hogan formula. I'd say non-formula title defense. I didn't think there was much Hogan formula here at all, actually. He works the mat a lot early. Morocco gets the double heat, and then we get the count-out win. So I thought this was a really nice story one in what will be a series between these two. And I love how they saved the pile driver, and I like how Morocco gets the count out win instead of doing a double count out or DQ with Fuji or something. I like that Morocco actually gets the win to justify the rematch.
I'm you're gonna think I'm nuts. I'm gonna give it 3.5. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna give it an extra half star. This match was I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. Crowd was hot. Morocco was really, he was stiffing Hogan and he was giving him some pretty stiff shots and, working over his basic power offense, but it wasn't like lazy kind of chucking around and, warbling around in the ring. Maybe he was motivated because, again, you had this huge, this reboot and everything. And then he's not at WrestleMania, which is still still mind-blowing. And he comes out here and he puts on a really solid match. Do you notice Hogan seemed – maybe it was like his face after the match, but he seemed really puffy in this one, puffier than normal. I don't know what his cycle was at that time, but it just seemed like his face was plumper than it usually is. I don't know what that was, but I thought it was good storytelling. Morocco really trying to work that he wanted to hit that pile driver and Hogan wouldn't let him, so Morocco just punishes him in other ways. It's a bummer because I would love to have had Parv on this show because I would like to have seen him try to justify this being a terrible match because it absolutely was not. Hogan worked hard. Morocco worked hard. The crowd's through the roof. I don't want to say the ending was weak, but it was solid enough that at least Morocco got the win without Hogan having to, show that much ass. And sets up what would be, it's announced later on in the show, but sets up what would eventually be a big rematch between these two. And I don't know, it's a good little mini feud for Hogan in between WrestleMania and everything. No Piper on this show tonight, so the din of WrestleMania kind of dies off a little bit. We enjoy that memory. Now we kind of move on to some fresh stuff. So it was kind of neat to see Hogan. I didn't want to see any. I think we had shut the door on WrestleMania, at least temporarily, and it was nice to kind of do something fresh on this next show instead of having lingering feuds and that kind of stuff. So I was happy to see something a little different, and I really think this is – for those that can find it, it's on YouTube. Look up the card. This was really a good match, and it may have been one of Morocco's best matches in a while.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he wasn't lazy at all. You know, he kept up with the pace. And I like the mat stuff early, too. It made it stand out as different. I like this alternate Hogan world where he's out of the main feud and he just gets into this match with Morocco, and it's a different style. And the crowd was so pumped to see him. Yeah, I mean, I really dug this. I thought it was really well done. And Morocco, I thought, did a nice job of making himself credible. And I know he's got the credible name. But coming off the layoff, he hasn't really been established up the ladder. So to step into a world title match off of Mania while Hogan's still feuding with Piper, you know, wasn't an easiest spot to make himself seem legitimate in many ways, especially since you're wondering, well, are they really going to have Hogan? You know, I know it's a different mindset then, but I thought he stepped in and did a good job of hanging with Hogan and making himself look like a credible threat. So, yeah, I just a really good match. I enjoyed it.
Yep, I did too. And your time was 13:35 was the official time. A lot of long matches, JR, and that's another point I'm going to bring up later on. All right, so since this was probably the intermission, why don't we take our own intermission? I really enjoyed this show so far. I really have. It may be so far the best straight-up house show, not counting like where to settle the score, obviously Mania. So far, the best straight-up house show we've seen so far.
Well, as far as the other ones have had probably on a balance like a better big match, but this is our most overall balanced top to bottom. Like, we haven't really – I mean, even though we gave Bundy a dud, it wasn't really a stinker. It was still pretty quick and served a purpose. So we really haven't had anything that drags the show down at all.
Yes. So and we got more good stuff to come. Mm-hmm. When we come back, three matches remain. The hot tag team title feud gets split in half. And then our main event is focusing – probably our main event's probably the only thing that is a little bit of a WrestleMania leftover. But it's also involving – I mean, right now, JR, we could still say the hottest feud in the promotion not involving Piper. And it's in our main event as well. So plenty more to come here. Please be podcast in the vault, April 22nd, 1985. But first – let us go back for a word from manufacturers.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, Place to Be Nation Pop feed, Pro Wrestling Only feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Nation, we are back here looking at the April 22nd, 1985 Madison Square Garden House Show. And Scott, as we enter the spring, of course, we it's an interesting time in the world of pop culture. Sports kind of in a, maybe entering a bit of a lull, but of course, music and movies hitting that, you know, kind of spring, I don't want to say major launch, but we're getting there toward the summer when all the big popcorn flicks come out. Of course, our last number one song we heard was Phil Collins' One More Night back in March at WrestleMania. So is he still reigning on top, or are we looking at something different?
No, we he is bumped. The new number one for this week, you got to look at one of the big issues in the world in the mid-'80s, and that was world hunger, particularly in Ethiopia. You know, and you see all those pictures on TV of the little kids with the, you know, with the bellies that are not full of food. And,
Sally Struthers started yet?
Feed the Children? No, Sally Struthers was more like the late 80s because she was still, you know, moderately thin because, I mean, All in the Family had just ended like maybe 3-4 years earlier. And the Feed the Children didn't come until she got, you know, slightly bigger.
Ironically, yes. She got better than that.
Yes, you know, when she was the infamous, what was it, the South Park scene where she's in the warehouse eating veal roll-ups or whatever the fuck it is.
So I didn't realize she was the voice of Charlene on Dinosaurs.
Was she really? I didn't know that either.
So
they decided, the musicians of the world decided to do something for world hunger. Thus, the group was called USA for Africa. And the song was We Are the World.
Do you remember the name of the short-lived Archie Bunker's Place spinoff? It was 1 year, and Struthers reprised her role as a new divorcee.
Mike and something?
Nope, not Mike and Molly.
Mike and Molly? No. Mike and what the fuck was her name? I don't even remember.
The spinoff was named Gloria.
Gloria Bunker.
Gloria, the new divorcee, became an exchange student when her husband Mike exchanged her for one of his students. Series co-starred?
Leonardo DiCaprio. No.
He was a doctor of an animal clinic where Glory was the assistant. Burgess Meredith.
Really? Yep. That's fantastic.
In between Rockies.
Well, he was already dead, so. At least Mickey was already dead, so. Sally Struthers sang with veal roll-ups. No, she didn't. Among the many luminaries that were on USA for Africa, I mean, we could just list. I mean, it was the who's who at the time. Diana Ross, Michael Jackson. The Boss, Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, Paul Simon, Huey Lewis, Al Jarreau. Who else was on there? Jeffrey Osborne.
Is it Al Jarreau?
No, it's Al Jarreau. Al Jarreau? Joe LaDuke? No. God, who else was on there? Bette Midler. Oh, God. Cyndi Lauper. Cyndi Lauper was on there. Who else?
I got the whole list.
All right. How many did I get?
The conductor was Quincy Jones. And here we go. Soloists in order of appearance. Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, Kenny Rogers, James Ingram, Yamo was there, Tina Turner, Billy Joel, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick, Willie Nelson, Al Jarreau, Bruce Springsteen, Kenny Loggins, this is it, Steve Perry, yep. Daryl Hall, Huey Lewis, Cyndi Lauper, Kim Carnes, Bob Dylan, Ray Charles, weird, Hall with no oats. He was left behind.
Yes.
In the chorus, alphabetically, Dan Aykroyd, Harry Belafonte, Lindsey Buckingham, Mario Cipollina, Johnny Cola, Sheila E., Bob Geldof, Bill Gibson, Chris Hayes, Sean Hopper, Jackie Jackson, LaToya Jackson, Marlon Jackson, Randy Jackson, Tito Jackson, all the non-important Jacksons, Waylon Jennings, Bette Midler, John Oates, oh, there's Oates, Jeffrey Osborne, you'll see him at the PC games every now and then, the Pointer Sisters, and Smokey Robertson, Robinson, and of course,
Robinson.
Smokey Robinson, center for the Bucks, and instrument players, David Page, synthesizers, Michael Boddicker, synthesizers, Paulino DaCosta, percussion, Louis Johnson, synth bass, Michael O'Martin, keyboards, Greg Filiganis, keyboards, and John Robinson on drums.
Yep, and this was all set up by Bob Geldof of the Boomtown Rats, and of course that summer, and we'll get into this, JR, because I'm sure the Summer House shows are close. Of course, we will also get into Live Aid, which also had a lot to do with this as well. So that was the number one song when the poll, when the Billboard came out that Saturday, April 20th.
It had just come out March 8th was when it was released.
Yes, it was really, yes. And it, but it hit number one first time. Well, actually, it's been number one for a couple weeks at this point. And
it's
number
actually
two,
the first, I should have said, it's the first single since the Beatles' Let It Be to enter the Billboard's top five within 2 weeks of its release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a big deal. It was a big deal. I had the cassette. I got it for my birthday. I remember that year. Yeah, big deal. I don't remember what the other songs were. That's the sad part. It was a whole tape. It had like 12 songs, and I don't remember any of the. This was the first one. I don't remember the other 11.
Well, the vinyl had this and then Grace by Quincy Jones.
Okay. Yeah, no, I had a tape. It had like 8 or 9 other songs on it. Number two, a lot of these songs we've talked about over the last few weeks already, or last few shows. Number two, Crazy for You by Madonna, the song from Vision Quest. Number three, Night Shift by the Commodores, sans Lionel.
Was that for the movie Night Shift?
No, it was not. You know who was in the movie Night Shift? Do you remember?
Was that, is that Gutenberg?
No, it was, Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler.
That's right.
Post. And, Shelley Long as a hooker.
Hmm.
Right,
it's the best show.
At number four, our past number one from our last show, One More Night by Phil Collins. Number five, Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge.
Yes.
It's been the rhythm of the night.
DeBarge is driving to your house, asking for your leftover food.
Number six, I'm on Fire by Bruce from Born in the USA. Number seven, a song you hear often here on PlacementNation.com because it is my intro.
Hypnotize.
And Emotion. Oh, that too. No, and Emotion with Obsession. Of course, it is the opening theme to a main event.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight, Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds. We should know that song, JR, because on our War to Settle the Score episode, that movie that the song came from was number one its opening weekend, The Breakfast Club.
Yes.
Don't you forget about me. Number nine is one of the weirdest but most well-known 80s songs in terms of one-hit wonders. Murray Head. One Night in Bangkok.
Mm-hmm.
One Night in Bangkok. That's a terrible song.
Famously sung by Mike Tyson in The Hangover 2.
That's right. And at number 10, I just mentioned her. She was in USA for Africa. Missing You by Diana Ross. So there was your top 10.
I'm going to have to close tonight's show with Bangkok, I think.
Which one?
Sweeter. Sweeter. Banging.
Yeah, exactly.
Hillbilly Jim's mom in Bangkok.
Bangkok is in Hillbilly Jim's mom. Anyway, there's your top 10 on the Billboard chart.
Say my Bangkok.
For the week of April 20th, 1985. All right. JR, if you want to look these up, four movies came out the previous Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any of them. One of them I think I do, the one that made the most money, but here we go. At number four that made zero money, it's a comedy called Petit Khan. P-E-T-I-T, Khan.
K-H-A-N?
No, Khan like con artist.
Oh. Like Killer Khan.
Killer Khan.
Killer Khan goes to France.
With the sweeter.
P-E-T-I-T?
Yes, P-E like petite, like a petite filet. Petite
C-O-N?
Slash, C-O-N.
Slash it made
no
con? Money,
so nobody can't find it. What?
I don't think it exists on... You should create the Wikipedia entry.
Well, it made no money, so...
Jesus. Right. I mean, for something to not have a Wikipedia entry.
I know. At number three, it made $376,686 its weekend. It's called Lily in Love, another
comedy.
Okay,
hang on. I found Petit Con on IMDb. Oh, starring okay. Gérard Lozier.
Guy
Marchand. Guy Marchand. Caroline Celia. There's nothing about the plot. It looks like it was a French movie. Oh, the best comedy about puberty and adolescence.
Oh, yeah,
it's not been
French.
Regarded as a cult movie yet. Based on his own comic director, Gérard Lozier presents us with a 16-year-old brat who couldn't be more arrogant toward his loving mother and father. Helpless and constantly hurt by his intolerable hatred, they rent him a room upstairs where he drives himself more and more into teenage depression. When he finally wants to cure in the hippie family of a schoolmate, this is a detailed portrait of teenage psychology in a stadium of life, where one claims the superiority to his parents and anybody else when one doesn't really know that one's anger is derived from sexual frustration and irritation. All these little details about adolescence make this film incredibly funny. I recommend it to friends. Blah, blah, blah. It doesn't seem to be very well known outside of France. So there you go. Yeah. Petit Con.
Okay.
Petite penis.
At number at
And
number
actually,
three.
By the way, the reason we yes. can find it on the, well, on the poster, it's P apostrophe tit. Petit Con. I'm going to see if it's on. It is on Wikipedia like that. P apostrophe T-I-T Con.
Petits. All right. At number three, another comedy. It made $376,686. Lily in Love.
Okay. Lily in
one,
Love.
One L. L I L Y. Lily in Love.
Is that starring Lily Tomlin?
No. That is how her first name is spelled, but I don't know why they would do that. But
Hungarian American co production.
Oh, Jesus.
By Ferenc Molnár. It's a tale of comedic deception and romance. Fitz Wynn, a truly talented but overly satisfied stage actor, wants to star in a new movie written by his wife, Lily. She does not feel Fitz is the right for the part, explains to him why and what she's looking for in the role. Fitz proceeds to orchestrate his own transformation to Roberto Terranova, a blonde Italian who seems to be exactly what Lily wants. Christopher Plummer, Maggie Smith, Adolf Green.
Well, they're well-known. Christopher Plummer, well-known, as is Maggie Smith. At number two... It made $4,389,334. It's actually a horror movie. I think I remember this movie. It's called The Company of Wolves.
Okay. This is a shit week for movies.
It is a shit week. It was a shit week for movies. You are correct. Except British, I think I remember the number one, too.
It's a British gothic fantasy horror film.
I think I remember this movie.
Starring, any guess? There's at least one person you'll know. I'll
British.
Give you the other name. Sarah Patterson.
Okay.
Stephen Ray. And okay. David Warner.
Oh, David Warner. I know him. Roddy McDowell?
No, it's a female.
Oh, female. Interesting. Who?
Think mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
Older.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe into kind of a fantasy.
Oh! It's 4 o'clock.
It is. Coming up next on Monday Night Raw. That's a...
Or be you walking over my desk as it's blasting on the TV behind me.
Angela yes. Lansbury.
Angela Lansbury. There she is.
Bedknobs and Bruce Six. Was she in that? That was her, right?
Yeah, she was in this. I can't believe that. I can't. I mean, I know A&E's gone through so many changes over the last, like,
is that
what?
Still on?
No. Oh, but okay. I was about to say that I think that might have been the last vestige of A&E before it.
Yeah,
went
she was a dame
else.
Too, huh? Just like Maggie Smith.
She was dame, yeah.
Pair
yeah.
of dames.
Her name.
She was a dime when she was younger. This is a Lansbury 1950, not bad.
Yep. And finally, the movie of the weekend, it made it $10.6 million, a comedy called Moving Violations. I think I remember this.
God's sakes.
I know, I think I remember this, though. Seems like a
crash
movie.
Course in traffic school from the creators of Police Academy. Comedy
yep,
featuring
so.
John Murray, Jennifer Tilly, Brian Backer, Sally Kellerman, Need Revolves, blah, blah, blah. Fred Willard, of course. Still going.
I'm
guessing he was the
movie.
Fucking dad. I'm guessing that's what he did. Group of people in Birch County, California, fictionalized city county, which is very similar to real life LA, being ticketed for numerous traffic violations and result lose their licenses and driving privileges, or ordered by the judge to attend a driving course program in order to get their licenses and vehicles back. But the assigned teacher, James Keach, conspiring with the judge in a plan to make sure they fail miserably.
Yep,
so they
I remember
sell their impounded cars.
Yep,
what a scam! What a scheme!
Yep, such an 80s heel thing. I remember this movie, actually. I remember it. It was funny. It was a cute
How much money did the fucking town need? They had to sell these shitty impounded cars.
I know, really. Anyway, that was your top movie of the weekend. That was your top release that weekend on Friday the 19th.
I'm surprised they didn't bring in Angela Lansbury in 1950 to Gorgeous George or something. She's not bad at that point, I'm telling you.
Yeah, no, it was a rough weekend.
It's like a D'Amato 10, Angela Lansbury in 1950.
Yes. Why wasn't Angela Lansbury in Latite?
Born in 1925. She's 91, Scott. Still going.
I cannot believe she's still alive. Wow.
Well, she did write about murder.
I think she should have been on with D'Amato in Latite. All right. Major League Baseball, of course, and yes, Latite. Major League Baseball in full force on Monday, April 22nd, JR. The Yankees, your Bombers, had the day off. The Mets beat the Cardinals in Bush 7-6. So the standings at this point, obviously very early in the season. The Tigers lead the East at 7-4. Remember, there were only four divisions back in those days. The Tigers lead the East at 7-4. The Angels lead the West at 8-5. The Mets lead the East, the National League East, at 9-3. And the Reds lead the West at 8-5. Your New York Yankees were 5-5, a game and a half out. So obviously very early in the season. In the NBA and NHL were both in the playoffs. There were no games on this day, but we were right in the middle of the first round. The East was top four seeds blowing everybody out. Celtics led the Cavs 2-0. Remember back then, the first round was best of five. Uh-huh. Pistons led the Nets 2-0. Bucks led the Bulls 2-0. That was Michael's rookie year, I believe. And the Sixers led the Bullets 2-0. In the West, only one team had a 2-0 lead. That was the Lakers, big shock. They led the Suns 2-0. Meanwhile, the other three first-round series, Jazz Rockets, Trailblazers, Mavs, and Nuggets Spurs were all 1-1. And in the NHL, they were in the – well, back then it was called the Division Finals. Today would be the Conference Semis. The Nordiques, and the Canadians were tied in a game apiece.
Les Petits Nordiques.
And the Flyers led the Islanders 2-0. In the West, or the Campbell Conference, that was, of course, the East. The Chad Campbell Conference. The North Stars – predecessor, of course, to the Dallas Stars back in the day. North Stars and Blackhawks tied at 1, and the Oilers, who I believe were the defending world champions, led the Jets 2-0.
Unless speaking... Thrashers, I don't care.
Speaking of the Jets, our last note, and then we'll head back to the Garden. 1 week from that following Tuesday, which would have been the 23rd, was the next day. So the 30th, JR, was the 1985 NFL draft. Can you remember who the number one pick was? I will start the sentence, see if you can finish it. With the first pick in the 1985 NFL draft, the Buffalo Bills select. He would end up playing his whole career there and be a Hall of Famer.
Bruce Smith.
Defensive end, Virginia Tech. Yes.
I was debating Thurman Thomas, but I didn't think he went one. And I knew what's-his-face didn't go one. K-Gun there. I knew he didn't go one.
Oh, no, he did not go first, no. There were many Hall of Famers in the first round. Chris Dolman was picked fourth by the Vikings, but here is where I'm going to break your heart a little bit, JR. Between 10 and 16 in the first round, three wide receivers were chosen. With the 10th pick, the New York Jets took Al Toon.
The man.
With the 13th pick, the Cincinnati Bengals took Eddie Brown. Ugh. And with the 16th pick, ready for this, the San Francisco 49ers took Jerry Rice.
Al Toon was solid.
He was very solid. He just got hit in the head too much. That was his problem. What, did he have like 11 concussions in his career?
Yeah. But he was a three-time Pro Bowl receiver.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at everything else going on.
And in other teams, in the 15 teams above there's defense. I mean, Jerry went to Mississippi Valley State. Nobody really knew who the hell he was. And they knew he was a solid player. But again, back then, if you looked at a guy at a college like that, you really weren't thinking, well, maybe something's wrong with him. Maybe he's a fucking head case or whatever.
Well, I mean, he led the league in receptions in 88, 93. And then he retired at age 29, 9 concussions. So yeah. I mean, I don't think it was, you know, obviously Jerry Rice is the greatest of all time. I don't think it's that glaring. I mean, Eddie fucking Graham, whatever his name was that they drafted.
Eddie Graham. Eddie Brown. Eddie Graham.
Four-time Three-time Pro Bowl, three-time All-Pro, AFC Player of the Year in 86. That's not a bad draft pick.
Nope.
They made much worse draft picks, trust me.
Yes. No, they did. There were 9 rounds that year, and this are 10 rounds. 11. How many rounds were there? 12. 5 Hall of Famers. I mentioned 3 of them. Bruce Smith, Jerry Rice, Chris Dolman.
Yep.
2 more.
Tom Brady. If Tom Brady's not mentioned, he's the Hall of Famer. You guys don't know football.
fuck him. In the fourth round, 86th pick overall by the Bills.
Thurman Thomas.
Andre Reed. No, Thurman Thomas was still in college. Andre Reed was drafted from Cutstown University, which I've been at. Yes, he was.
You were in college.
Yes. And JR, little wrestling connection here. Linebacker from Auburn University, taken in the fifth round, 113th overall by the Los Angeles Rams.
Big John Studd.
Yeah. Someone with more talent than Big John Studd. No.
Well, that's Luger.
Kevin Green.
Oh, yeah, baby. I got taken down to Slambury.
Fuck. So there you go. So, yeah, 1 week from tomorrow, April 30th, 1985, was the 1985 NFL Draft.
All right, and 1 week and from tomorrow, we'll continue this show.
Yes, there's our snapshot of pop culture this week in 85. All right, back to the Garden, and we were just after that red-hot world title match. The other big hot feud, JR, going on at the moment for the World Tag Team titles, your champions, of course, from WrestleMania, the Foreign Legion, as Mr. Sutton would say.
The Iron Sheik. The Foreign Legion.
The Foreign Legion. The Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov. And the number one contenders, the former champions, the U.S. Express, Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo, would split. We'd split things up, and they would have singles matches. And who is up first?
Oh, Sheiky Baby is up first, sure, against Mike Rotundo. I know it's a nice continuation. I like the way they did this with the tag title feud. Split it up. Keep it rolling.
Yep.
Don't do a rematch. Have them fight here separately. And they'll find a couple of ways to do this over the next few months. So a good heat on Sheik and a wild pop for Rotundo and Albano as they come out to Born in the USA. Rotundo starts red hot, unleashing a flurry and driving Sheik to the floor as the crowd chants USA. Rotundo maintains control on the mat, hooking in a headlock and grinding away. Gorilla and Gene put over Sheik's amateur and pro resume as he breaks out the hold and survives a sunset flip pin attempt. They continue to trade headlocks and counters, sprinkling in some near falls along the way. Rotundo starts to favor the arm as Sheik starts to gain some confidence and land some hard strikes. Rotundo gets knocked to the floor but claws his way back into a nice pop. Sheik grabs a chin lock and then twists that into a nice arm bar and then into a hammerlock. Rotundo wiggles free and blocks a Sheik loaded boot kick followed by an atomic drop. Rotundo teeks Sheik down and drops an elbow for two and then goes to a front face lock, which he wrestles into a rear chin lock and then into a hammerlock. And I thought, Scott, there's been a lot of quality mat work here on both ends so far. Sheik presses Rotundo into the ropes, but whiffs on a right hand and tumbles to the floor. Rotundo follows him out and cracks Sheik with a pair of stiff uppercuts. Back inside, Rotundo goes back to a side headlock, but Sheik powers up and hits an inverted atomic drop before kicking away. Gorilla says Sheik plants an ominous-looking hard thing in the face of Rotundo. And Gene responds, "You're talking about his boot, right?" Which made me laugh. Oh, God, that was so
Jesus,
funny.
Gene.
Oh, Sheik plants that ominous-looking hard thing into the face of Rotundo.
That was funny.
Sheik gets aggressive with his strikes and chokes and slings Rotundo to the floor. It's like Gene could barely, he was starting to like laugh before he could even get it out. Rotundo to the floor, Sheik rams him hard into the announce table and pegs him with a chair. Gorilla and Gene just shitting on the referee here for allowing the chair and everything to happen on the outside. Sheik rolls inside. Rotundo makes it back inside. Sheik catches him in an abdominal stretch. Rotundo breaks free as Sheik couldn't hook the leg, but Sheik keeps control with a gut-wrench suplex for two. Rotundo blocks a vertical suplex and hits one of his own for two. But as the men get up, they collide head-to-head. Gorilla rips the referee again as Sheik tries to slam Rotundo and then heads up top. Rotundo dodges a diving headbutt and then unloads with fists and kicks. Sheik reverses a whip but misses a high knee in the corner, allowing Rotundo to roll him up for the win and a huge pop. And Scott, I love this match. I thought it was really fun. Both guys busted their ass. They told a nice story. There was a lot of focused mat work, a lot of limb work, good counters and reversals, lots of teases. I thought both guys showed some nice chemistry. They were patient. They built up the psychology of the match. The crowd was fantastic. They stayed hot, buzzing the whole time, and they really bought into the finish. I went 3.5 on this. My match of the night so far, Scott, and I really, really like this one a lot. It caught me completely off guard.
Yeah, I give it 3.5 as well. And I tell you something, JR, I don't think it was an accident. I think they looked at the two teams and said, I think we have to give the I think we have to give the two kind of like expert technicians the
long match here.
The long match and put them together.
Yeah.
Sheik and Rotundo are just two just expert mat guys.
Yeah.
Perfect to work together on. Perfect.
No, it was very shrewd to put them together.
Yeah, and it was just a great match. Let me tell you something. Take the cheating out of the way. I'm sorry. I know he's kind of a nut, you know, he's kind of crazy and everything, but when it came to brass tacks, Iron Sheik was a good fucking wrestler. And he could really deliver a solid match. And he had to throw a little cheating in because that was the job, and you know, that was his job as a heel. But I mean, he could, and the match was how long do you think it was?
I'm gonna say like 15-ish.
14, 16.
Yep,
right, pretty close. I mean, it was just it was a good 14 minutes. I mean, they really worked their asses off, and the crowd, I think, left over even from the break after Hogan. I think that the crowd was just red hot in this last like hour, you would say, of this show. Yeah, I mean, it was just amazing how mm-hmm. good these guys worked together, and again, I think this is why I'm so happy doing these shows. We don't remember any of this feud. We're like, right. You know, the next time we see, you know, next time we're on pay-per-view, the belts have already changed hands twice.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm so excited that this feud was continuing and they were really going at it. And the crowd was hot and, you know, hard things were being hit. And I mean, it was funny to hear Mean Gene do that. But the match was, I can't get over it. 3.5. 2 3.5s on this show for me. It's crazy. I mean, you could argue that it's the best show in the building this year in some ways. But tremendous match. And Rotundo gets the win.
Now, watching this, would you have pegged Rotundo to be like a big potential breakout babyface? Because I felt that way watching it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. No doubt. I would have thought that if they broke up and both joined singles or one of them turned heel, I think the one that would have turned heel would have been Barry.
Right.
Yeah. You know. But
no, great.
I mean,
network.
What a match.
Yeah, it was really impressive. It was. And Sheik hung right with him. It was really good. A lot of back and forth. And I kept expecting it to end, and they kept trudging on. I'm like, oh, man. And then by the end, you just really invested in it. And I thought this may go to a draw. It felt like the pacing was taking us there. And then the finish and the pop, I think the crowd was thinking it too because they pop huge for the win. It's like they didn't actually expect a finish.
Right. Right, exactly.
And that's 14th. Where, you know, if people shit on draws, but this is why there's times when the draw is important, and it makes sense because it's in your consciousness of something that could exist.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
A draw is very – the potential for an actual draw is high at this time. So yep. You're thinking it, and then you're almost surprised when you don't get it. So it's cool that it's a thing that is in your head as something that could happen.
Right. I agree 100%. And this would have been a case for it. They didn't do it, and that's fine. It doesn't take away from the match, but it's perfectly fine here because it's a hot tag feud. You got gold at stake in this feud. It was they were very smart putting these two together and the other two together in the second match. So Mike Rotundo gets the win. Fantastic match in 14-16. It's a shade above Hogan Morocco for match of the night, but we still have two matches left to go. So coming up next, the other half, and this is where I was surprised, JR. I would have put Sheik Rotundo second and put Fujinami here.
Yeah, I kind of like having these back to back though.
Do you really? I thought it was really odd, actually.
Yeah.
I thought it was strange because I've never seen that where the two tag matches are back to back. I mean, it doesn't make it there. I mean, I don't think it's a problem with it. I'm just saying that.
Yeah, maybe
I've
right.
never seen that before.
Yeah, maybe they could have split them up. You think Fujinami right before the main? I would have said Fujinami coming out of the break. You go to break after Hogan Morocco, come back with Fujinami, then maybe Sheik Volkoff and then the main.
Yeah, and put Sheik Rotundo second.
After, I mean, Sheik Rotundo, yeah. No, I'd have Barry. How long's Barry Volkoff?
12-11.
Yeah, okay. Maybe leave that here. Maybe just swap Fujinami and Rotundo. Although, I don't know. I kind of like Rotundo here because it almost felt like a main event match in some ways.
Yeah, it really did. And you leave – because it's weird seeing, like, the manager stay out there, you know, Blassie and you know, Big Fat Sloppy Pig.
Right.
Anyway, but
I'm going to talk about this next week because it's more prevalent. I'm coming around on Lou Albano between the TNTs and these house shows and seeing him more week to week. I'm starting to see some of his value more than I used to.
I'll tell you what. Well, let's.
I want to save it for next week when we get to start.
We're going to save it because I have plenty to say about that as well. I don't disagree with you. All right. So next up, the other half, JR, of this red hot tag team title feud. The big Russian against the big man from Sweetwater, Texas.
Sweetwater, Texas. And that is Barry Windham taking on Nikolai Volkoff. Tag title feud rolls right in. Nikolai sings the national anthem and the bitches at the crowd. And then we get another big pop for Windham and Albano again with Born in the USA. Windham has such a good look here. Just feels like a star when you see him. And I mean, I can see why he would have been pegged at this point as someone that would be like a major star in the next 3 years or so. Just his look and everything about him. Gene says he went backstage between matches and let the ref from the last match have it. Made me laugh. Gorilla said if he went back there, he would have gotten physical with him. Windham controls the arm to open things up and gets a roll up for two. Albano and Blassie get into it at ringside as the match resets. Windham goes right back to the arm, but Nikolai breaks free. Windham drives him back with a nice drop kick. Volkoff peppers some strikes to take over and plants a back elbow to the side of the head to knock him down. Nikolai stalks around and slowly pounds away as Gorilla shits on this referee too. Nikolai drops Windham with a big press slam and then grabs a bear hug. Windham eventually breaks free and hooks a sleeper, which drove Nikolai to a knee. And then when broken, Nikolai lands a low blow out of desperation. Windham battles back and hits an atomic drop and tries for a slam, but he buckles under the weight of a Nikolai near fall. The two collide on a crisscross after they recover. Nikolai dodges a dropkick and then went to work with strikes into an interesting series of rolling pin cover attempts. Windham punches and headbutts Nikolai away and then slugs Volkoff to the mat for two. Nikolai recovers but misses a charge in the corner, and Windham takes advantage and hammers away with a flurry until Sheik shows up and attacks to draw the DQ. Rotundo came sprinting out to a pop, and all four men brawl until the champs bailed. Again, Scott, another solid match. It was a bit slow at times, a bit strike-heavy. Windham's selling was pretty good. The comebacks worked well, and the crowd liked this too. Good way to keep the feud moving. I went 2 stars again, my parade of 2-star matches tonight. But I feel like they all were out of the same bowl. And I'll tell you this, after Sheik Rotundo, I thought this was going to go one of two ways. Either a quick squash or Windham just mauls him and pins him really fast, or a really boring match that just sucked. And it was neither. It was just a fine 12-minute affair. And we get the DQ to keep this one going. And we'll talk about where it's going in a minute. But what did you think of this one?
I love this match a lot. Not as good as Sheik and Rotundo. I'll give it 2 stars as well. And that's because unlike Sheik and Rotundo, where they're pretty much almost the same wrestler, Nikolai is kind of a big power guy, lumbering moves. Barry is it's hard to explain. I mean, he's not a high flyer. He's a decent MAC technician. He's a big striker. He's kind of like, his dad. Punches, bulldogs, that kind of thing. It would have been hard to get a good match out of Nikolai at this point, a match that good compared to what we just watched. But I have to say the main thing about this match that did it for me was for this whole card, I feel like everybody really brought their working shoes, their boots. And I mean every match is OT. I mean this is our third straight double digit 10 minute plus match and are like fifth of the show. I mean, everybody's working OT on this show. I feel like people really, I mean, the roster really brought the goods tonight. And this match, I'm thinking this would have been like a 4 minute sprint or something, like you said. Instead, I mean, they get 12-11. It's not atrocious, but it's kind of hard to compare it to what we just watched. I mean, that match was phenomenal. This is just kind of a basic kind of, power thing to kind of, bookend the feud. And the brawl at the end is fucking amazing. Rotundo, you think Rotundo was like Hogan when he came into the ring. I mean, the pop was ridiculous. I just love the whole package. When we talk about moment of the night, I could argue that just Rotundo's return in the ring might be it. I mean, the pop was off the charts, So that match ends in a DQ. The Foreign Legion obviously still have the belts, but U.S. Express hot on their heels. These two matches were a combined 26-27, but definitely worth it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a good way to keep the feud going. It was done effectively, and we got two really good matches out of it, and I like how they're keeping this brewing. And again, we'll see next week how things continue with this feud as well, but and over the next 2 weeks. But I thought this was really good. And we then have the Fink, who comes to the ring and runs down the full card, Scott, for next month, capped by three huge matches. One is a tag team title rematch, Sheik and Volkoff against the U.S. Express. We get another rematch with Hulk Hogan defending his title against Magnificent Morocco, and a match we talked about potentially a lot last week, Brutus Beefcake and Luscious Johnny V take on David and Bruno Sammartino, and the crowd is just ballistic at all three of these. I mean, if you're in that crowd, how quickly are you purchasing a ticket to the next month's show when you hear those three?
Well, the MSG, this made me laugh, the Madison Square Garden box office tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. and all Ticketron outlets. God, I love that. Fucking so old school. Ticketron. I used to have to go to where was your ticket place? Do you go to the mall?
Macy's at the mall, yeah.
Yeah, ours was Filene's at the Milford
Mall. Oh, actually, it might have been Filene's. Yeah, man, you know what? It was Filene's, I think.
Yeah, I think Filene's was like a Ticketron / Ticketmaster outlet. That's where I used to get my tickets all
and
the time.
And I think Newberry Comics had one, too, at some point.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. But, I mean, if you're in that crowd, tell me you're like, holy fucking shit. First time since, I believe, mid-19 – I'm going to look it up. Well, you're doing your comments about the main event. I'm going to look up the Bruno thing. We do have one match left, JR, and again, another feud that's fucking red hot right now.
And we go backstage as well, Scott, just quickly before that.
Yes,
to set
it up.
Gene,
yes, you're right.
Chats with Tito Santana, the Junkyard Dog, about their upcoming tag team match tonight. JYD talks about what happened to Mania, says Tito is standing up for him. He says that Tito standing up for him was the greatest time of my life. A low bar for the JYD.
Yeah, pretty much.
Tito standing up for him, having his back, was the greatest time of his life. And he calls Brutus Fruitcake. Tito says he got involved at Mania because he's been dealing with Valentine's nonsense for months. Tito just wants to make the pay tonight, and he'll go after the title next time. So I like the tie-ins to Mania here. Santana, JYD, Greg Valentine, Brutus Beefcake. I thought it was good elevation for Beefcake. Good progression for Mania. Santana Valentine raging on. JYD on the periphery. And again, big spot for Beefcake. I thought it was funny that Beefcake was some parts unknown. Kind of an odd choice. Didn't really seem like a parts unknown kind of guy.
Somebody said that on one of our threads, I think it was, after we had posted one of the previous episodes. And I actually wrote that down in my notes tonight, this morning. Why is Brutus Beefcake from parts unknown? I don't get it. Then suddenly he popped up out of nowhere from San Francisco, California.
Right? They figured it out. They did some research.
Yeah, it's so strange.
But
yeah, I mean, we got a red hot, another red hot feud. I mean, we've talked about it, JR. Tito and the Hammer are just fucking tearing the lights, you know, tearing buildings down right now. And we got a hot tag here.
Yeah, another big pop as Tito and JYD come out to another one bites the dust. They come in hot and chase Beefcake and Hammer to the floor. They repeat that sequence again, and this time Hammer and Beefer take more time to regroup and settle down. Beefcake and JYD start things off as JYD rattles him with headbutts, sending him reeling to the edge of the apron. Gorilla and Gene bitch about Beefcake's designer arm plates, saying they should be banned because they have studs on them. The crowd fires up a Fruitcake chant that pisses off Beefcake even more. JYD keeps bringing the heat after Beefcake and Hammer collide. Tito tags in and wipes out both men and then whips Beefcake into Hammer. Tito takes Beefer down and hooks in a chinlock, but Beefcake powers out and drives Tito into the corner, tags in Hammer, who lays in heavy blows. Hammer and Beefcake do a nice job quick tagging and double teaming Tito to keep him in trouble. Gene rants about the heels not using the tag rope as he continues to rip the referees. Oh my God, all night long. Beefcake keeps pitching Tito to the floor. JYD keeps helping him out, getting him back in the ring. The quick tags continue as Gene explains that JYD needs to stay cool, wait for Tito to come to him, because that's the only way he can get out of this. I thought that was good analysis. Tito tries to fight to the corner, but the heels keep him away and continue to cut the ring off, double teaming effectively. JYD tries to break up the double team, but it doesn't get much, doesn't get very far as the Hammer starts to attack the leg to set up the figure four. Tito gets a hot flurry, but can't make the tag. A short brawl erupts as Gene is just destroying the referee more for losing control and track of the legal man. Tito crawls around, escapes both Beefcake and Hammer, and makes the tag. JYD starts working over both guys and gets a near fall on Hammer. JYD keeps bringing the heat with some headbutts, but misses a falling one. Hammer tags out to Beefcake, who starts to kick away at the ribs. JYD bust free and tags in Tito as we get a big Tito Hammer brawl with the crowd just rocking. Tito lands a clothesline for two, followed by JYD and Beefcake coming in and fighting. All four men continue to brawl until Tito mashes Hammer with a forearm for the win and a huge pop. Tito picks up another key win over the Hammer. And I like this, Scott, because it's similar to the show we just recapped, which is the day before this in Toronto on April 21st, where Tito tags with Steamboat to defeat Hammer and Beefcake. And it's Tito picking up key wins on Valentine in these tag matches, keeping the feud going and also building his resume for another title rematch at some point. So I like how they're mixing things up, having Tito import different faces. So him and Steamboat in Toronto and then here in MSG. And that Toronto match, Scott, we talk about in tomorrow's WWE Network Adventure. So that'll be on the site on Wednesday. You can read about that match, the Tito and Steamboat against Hammer and Beefcake. So good tie-in, back-to-back days here of these two shows. But yeah, I like that match. Another good match, a series of them tonight. I will say this. I thought this was not quite up to the standard as the usual Tito Hammer. It was a lot of fun. The feud continues. I thought Beefcake improved greatly. Working with Hammer will only help him out there. JYD and Tito works nicely as an upper mid-card face pairing. I went 3 stars on this. And I thought the Toronto match was 3.5. I went with Steamboat and Tito instead of JYD, which I think makes sense. Again, really good. A nice close to the match. But I thought it was just a step behind the usual Tito Hammer stuff.
Yeah, I definitely think the Tito Steamboat team was 10 times better. I mean, you could argue that they could have done it here as well, but JYD's still crazy over. So, I forgot that I was looking forward to what JYD would come out with, and I forgot that they were still doing another one, Bites of Dust, which I always think is fucking awesome. It was one of my favorite ones next to Born in the USA and Eye of the Tiger. But the main point that I want to make that you said as well is, Brutus Beefcake's continued on the job training. Mm-hmm. I mean, you couldn't get better training from these three guys than you do from these three guys in this match right now. And it was fine. I mean, 16:03, longest match of the show. It wasn't slow or anything, but I definitely think that this Tito Hammer interaction was not as good as some of the past stuff.
Right.
But it was a fine main event. Crowd was crazy.
Oh God, all night.
Tito's still over. One of the hottest crowds we've had. But it's the Garden, so there's nothing to be surprised about. And a good way to end the show. You know, Tito, JYD, on top at the end of the night. We've had some interesting top-to-bottom action and some results, and this was a good way to finish the show off. Tito, you're still wondering if Tito is actually going to win the belt back or not, though. It's been, 8 months now, I think. You wonder, is he really going to win it back, or is this just kind of a lingering thing, you know? Is JYD the guy that's due to win the – you would have thought at this moment, as well as awesome as the Tito-Hammer feud was, that match at WrestleMania almost throws into doubt the possibility that JYD is the next babyface to be Intercontinental Champion. So interesting to see if things transition from here. But they get the win. Crowd's hot for them still. And the Tito Hammer War rages on. So, a great finishing match. God, what a show! All right, let's go to our grades and awards. All right.
Match of the night. I went Rotundo Sheik. I had that at 3.5, and nothing else that high. And it was my favorite match to watch. I enjoyed it the most.
Yeah, I actually had a tie, so I have no problem deferring to Rotundo Sheik, but I loved Hogan Morocco just as much.
It was really good. I thought it was just a notch below. I thought Rotundo Sheik just – I think maybe I added in the fact that it was more surprising. That came out of nowhere too.
Right, right.
So with that, I think worst match of the night is pretty easy. That's Bundy and the Sweeter checking in at a dud. And it wasn't even just because it was a squash. Swede just was not enjoyable at all in that match.
No.
I thought he actively hurt what they were trying to do with Bundy. So my MVP, Scott, is actually the crowd I went with on this night because they carried this entire show the whole way through. I thought they were excellent. You know, there's other ways you can go. Like, Hogan and Morocco were pretty good. And the main event, you had some options. You had, obviously, Rotundo and Sheik. But I thought the crowd was the one steady force throughout this whole night, especially the back half, that just never let up at all.
I'll go with that. I didn't really have a specific MVP. I was going to say all four in the tag feud, Wyndham, Rotundo, Sheik, and Volkov, but I like the crowd. I mean, they were given good stuff to cheer for. They were given good stuff to cheer. So I have no problem giving the crowd the MVP because they made that show. They gave that show so much energy. I got no issues with it at all. 18th. I think this might be a Place to Be podcast record for most people getting an MVP. 18,000 people getting right. MVP. But, I mean, they were crazy.
All right, spoiler award for our worst wrestler of the night. I went with the sweeter.
Oh, there's no doubt. He's going to get it until he never comes back.
Easily. Best moment. I actually went with a tie, but we can debate it. Hulk Hogan's entrance and then Mike Rotundo's win. I liked your interesting comment before about his interference or his save. I thought that was a good one, too. But to me, and I know all of his entrances are huge, this one just felt really special for some reason. Maybe because it was coming off Mania, but I mean, the crowd was just like absurd. Just way over the top absurd. I don't know. I really dug it. That would be my moment, was him coming out.
I'm going to say because Morocco was that hated, I'm going to give Morocco a little credit for making that pop that great. And I'm not knocking Hogan by any stretch, but I think Morocco's dislike that much by the crowd made that even better. Mm-hmm. I'm going to debate you and we can tie it if you want, but I still like Rotundo's save because I didn't expect, I mean, we expected it because she came in, but the crowd right. fucking lost the roof when he came into the ring and the four of them brawling, the place went,
let's go both. I mean, they were both great moments and yeah. Rotundo deserves nods across the board from the show because he was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm fine with that. I'm perfectly fine with going with the tie there. My Mr. USA award for the Juice Award was the British Bulldogs on this evening. I thought they were easily the most muscle packed onto frame ratio that we saw.
Yeah.
Especially how tiny they are. You know what I mean? Like just overly muscled up.
I mean, Morocco looked like he was because his back definition, his shoulders, he right. was looking pretty ripped. But and I still think Hogan had something was wrong with his face, but. I'll give it to – I don't know. It just looked like – his face just looked puffier than it usually does, but I don't know. Any event, I'm fine with the Bulldogs because okay. Davey Boy, the two of them always look fucking juiced.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm fine really, with that.
Yeah, they had jacked up. All right. Yeah. So I went for final grade out of 10. I went 6.5. Scott, I thought this was, to me, anything in the upper half over 5 is usually a strong show in my eyes. I think it lacks like that huge moment or match. You know, it tops at 3.5. But it has nothing bad. It's all, to me, ranged between 3.5 and 2 stars, which makes for a really strong house show. Right. I thought the commentary was pretty entertaining with this one, with all the bitching about the officiating and everything else. I didn't mind Gene. I thought it was a nice, tight show. I thought it was a good way to come off of Mania. I was disappointed a bit with Cobra and Fujinami. So, to me, I do dock it just a little bit for that. But I think 6.5 is a pretty strong grade for a house show.
I had usually on our Google sheet here, I usually will jot down personal notes in the slots and then we fix them obviously while we're on the air. And when I finished watching it, I gave it the absurd rating of 8.5.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I loved it so much, but I'm going to knock it down, but I'm going to grade it higher than you. I'm going to give it 7.5. Okay. That's how much I really love this show. I enjoyed it so much. I really did. Crowds were hot for the whole thing. Matches were all great, either from an in-ring or from an importance perspective. And the baby faces are just so over right now. Uh-huh. The only guy this show missed was Piper in terms of just energy, whether it's heel right. or face. But that was fine because Piper would have overshadowed anything any of the other heels did, and we needed
– And no Valentine. Bobby. No Heenan family either.
No Heenan family members. Nope. No Stud. No Patera. Nope. But I think this show needed – Valentine needed to be showcased – the Foreign Legion needed to be showcased. The other heels did. And you put Piper there, and they just get swallowed up. One guy – excuse me. One guy I was surprised JR was not on here, only because he's in a weird phase right now after what happened at Mania, was Orndorff. A little surprised he wasn't on here because after what happened at the end of Mania, you're not sure what the scoop is there. We'll see something, I think, at
Tomorrow.
Mania. Yeah, we'll see something
We'll see it next week on Saturday's main event. We also see it tomorrow. on the Network Adventure. That Maple Leaf Garden House show the day before was a very big Orndorff moment.
Yes, it is. Oh, yes, you are very much correct, sir. Yes, you are.
So it is interesting that they didn't do that here. I am a little surprised, but I think they wanted the series starting here with Hogan and Morocco. So, but check out that adventure tomorrow, PlaceMation.com. We do it each and every Wednesday if you're new to the show. We are watching everything on the network in chronological order. So we're up to the TNTs right after Mania around that stretch. But there is that Maple Leaf Garden house show. It's only three matches. They cut it down. But we talk about all of them. So it's me, Scott, Brian Bayless, Jason Greenhouse, Dan McGinn. So be sure to check that out.
Yes.
And get all, I'm sorry, Greeny's not in there anymore. It's me, you, Dan, and Brian. That's it right now. So be sure to check that out and each and every Wednesday. So lots of other stuff, PlaceMation.com as well, all of our podcasts and written articles and pieces. There's a great recap of World of Sport from our buddy Owen Morris. So be sure to check that out. A lot of discussion in the Twitter sphere and wrestling online world around that show, making its, I guess, I don't want to say debut, but return to the airwaves in the UK. We have a new Clotheslines and Headlines. Scott, I will not be on this week. We're going to have Glenn Butler, Steve Willie, Nate Milton, but they do have a really good show planned. Of course, be talking some Lucha Underground, be talking some Chikara. They'll be talking some year-end awards. So a lot to cover there with those guys. Be sure to check that out. It should be up late Thursday night or Friday this week, Clotheslines and Headlines. You have Main Event coming next week? I guess we can cover that next week.
Yep, Main Event we'll have next week. But I do want to promote a show that's currently right now on the PTBM Pop feed. Myself, Jason Greenhouse, and J. Arsenio Di Amato kind of turned back the clock to 2016 and kind of eulogized in tribute some of the more high-profile musicians and stars of the music world that passed away in 2016. And boy, were there a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So we had, it's a really fun show. We really enjoyed it. We did it the other night. It's up on it's on PlaceMeNation.com and it's on the PTBM Pop feed. Please check it out. It was really, I thought we did a pretty good job and I think you'll enjoy it. So check that out.
And subscribe to all of our feeds, the Place to Be podcast, or I should say the Place to Be wrestling feed, the Place to Be Pop feed, and then our pro wrestling only feed. So be sure to check out all three of those on iTunes, subscribe and rate us today. Social media, facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. If you want to join our live chats group, let us know, reach out to us directly and we can add you in there. You can follow us on Twitter, Place2BNation, Instagram and Tumblr as well. Search us out on those mediums. Also, if you're doing any more shopping on which you always do, it's not just a Christmas thing or a holiday thing. Year-round.
Gift cards.
Right. So. Year-round, we all do online shopping. So placemation.com/Amazon, your direct link to Amazon.com, and we get a little kickback from there to keep us up and running because we don't ask you for anything else so besides rating us and praising us. All right, Scott, so we are off until next week. We'll be back next Monday night looking at the first ever Saturday Night's Main Event from early May of 1985. Of course, the Mother's Day edition. As of now, scheduled, we will have a guest, and that is Ryan Everett. Of course, if you remember, he won the trivia tournament late last year, our Halloween trivia tournament, and this was his prize. He chose to jump on to review the show with us. So as of now, we're planning to have Ryan with us to check out Saturday's Main Event, and then we'll be back on the house show circuit the week after that. So.
Yes, and I did mention earlier we were talking about Bruno, because Da Brun will be at that May 20th house show. It was his last that night. That tag match we talked about will be his first match, official match in the Garden in 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. But it's a very interesting tidbit when that last house show was, but I'm going to hold on to it for 2 weeks. It's very serendipitous, but it was something happened on that evening in New York that no one will ever forget, that same night that he wrestled his last match at the Garden before that one. So we'll hold on to that little tidbit for 2 weeks.
Interesting enough, next week on The Adventure, ties in well, too, because Bruno's a guest on TNT and kind of teases his comeback. So all this kind of ties in together over the next couple weeks for us if you follow The Adventure on PlaceMajor.com and listen to the show. So, all right, we're going to go ahead and head out. Check out that pop episode that Scott mentioned. It's a good one. And, of course, we'll be back next week talking Saturday Night's Main Event. Until then, enjoy your night in Bangkok. We know the sweeter will.
One night in Bangkok in Mud Lick with Spotty's Bone. Down over your
above the waistline, sunshine. Your temples, your massage parlors.